The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, March 9th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kelms. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Michael Tilley with Talk Business and Politics. Welcome.
Well, thanks. It's always nice to be here.
Yeah.
Right next to the Kyle Kellums. I need to get an autograph. I tell people I know you, and they don't believe me.
So I'll sign an IOU. How's that? We've talked over the past couple of months about home sales in Northwest Arkansas. Spoiler alert, they're going straight up.
Yeah,
let's talk about Crawford and Sebastian counties.
It looks like they're trying to mimic Northwest Arkansas. January came out of the market very strong. February slowed down, but still, for the first 2 months of the year, the home sales is up almost $50 million, $49.3 million. That was compared to $45.4 million for the same period last year, up almost 9%. Again, as I always do, 2 months does not set a trend, but that's a pretty healthy gain. But let's look at the trend. And so the folks, Kevin King and Janella Graham at Weikert Realtors, the Griffin Company in Fort Smith, were kind enough to pull this data together. And so they looked at the 12-month numbers for the two counties. So for the past 12 months, sales are up around $387 million, up 7.5%. That's a good, healthy click. Again, a good sign for the regional economy, an economy that's proven difficult to show gains in jobs. There are some gains in jobs, but this is a positive sign with these home sales numbers.
What percentage of the overall, say, metro economic picture can we relate this to? You know, there's manufacturing, there's jobs.
What?
How good is this news? I guess I'm asking.
Well, that's a good question. I don't know what percentage, but home sales have traditionally been considered an indicator, if not a leading indicator. One, it shows because there are mortgages involved, lending, so it shows banks have a confidence. People who buy homes, there's the ancillary effect of they buy furniture, dishes, those kind of things. They remodel, renovate, so there's a construction activity related to it. So, as far as a percentage, I wouldn't know, but it's a good, healthy click. And in the Fort Smith metro area, Sebastian and Crawford County are by far the largest counties. So it's an interesting sign. And a part of it, too, it's not another good sign is that the prices are staying up. So I think the sale price, let me look at the numbers. Yeah, in Sebastian County, sales prices were up. The average home price is up almost 2%. So that's a good thing. In Crawford County, I think the sales prices. No, the Crawford County, over the 12-month period, has seen an almost 6% decrease. So it'll be interesting to see how that trend plays out. That's it. If there's a negative in these numbers, mm-hmm. that's it. You want to make – you know, it's a – it's a good thing the volume's up, the number of homes are up. In Crawford County, I'm sure home residents there would like to see their values go up as well.
No homeowner doesn't, I don't think. We did some research, and we found out there was some square footage in our region that still didn't have a bank on it. It was a Chaffee Crossing.
Right.
Guess what? There's going to be a bank.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, the Fort Smith Metro is not nearly as overbanked as Northwest Arkansas, but there are a few banks in that area. Yeah, but First Star Bank, Salisaw Bay's First Star Bank, $3.5 million bank off. And this is not really a branch. I was hesitant to call it in our story a branch development because it's a 12,000 square foot, two story bank, three drive through lanes. It's on it's a little over an acre. It's on Mazard Road. They're just near Chaffee Crossing in East Fort Smith. Like I said, $3.5 million development. It'll have two conference rooms. I think part of what they want to use it for is to kind of, you know, bring in community events also. But
and this is a developing swath of land out there.
Yes, this is, you know, and I'm not sure how many customers they have at ArcBest, but this will be near the new ArcBest facility out there, all the new residential developments. So this is definitely, for folks that know Fort Smith, this is definitely a interesting. And they bought this acre, a little over an acre, for $345,000 4 years ago. No telling what it's worth now. So,
and this is, they're based in Salisaw.
Yep. And they have about 150 employees total. They have off branches in Tulsa and Roland, you know, eastern Oklahoma, western Arkansas. This bank will house 20 employees when it's up and going. And I talked to Lance Smith yesterday, the regional president, and he said they're growing and they want to – he wouldn't give me a number, but he said he is hiring employees as fast as he can. There's only issue, which is the issue a lot of employers have, is just finding qualified people.
Monday night, the Fort Smith School Board will have a special meeting. We expect, or at least I do, expect them to say, yes, we're going to go ahead and ask for a millage increase, the first one in decades from Fort Smith voters. You had an article in Talk Business at talkbusiness.net this week, a conversation with the Sebastian County Assessor. What, if it's the proposal we think it's going to be and it's approved, it will mean for some members of the county?
Right. And Sebastian County Assessor Zach Johnson, I was visiting with him several weeks ago on another issue, and he said, hey, I just want you to know, no one's reporting on this, but some people assume that because they have a homestead exemption or they're disabled or whatever, that their millage won't go up, their tax won't go up if the millage goes up. And he said that it doesn't work that way. He had an experience in Greenwood sometime back. They had a vote. And after the vote, some of the seniors and those folks who had exemptions saw their rate go up, and they didn't think it was going to go up.
And if you're the assessor there, you hear from them.
Yes. And it's your fault.
Right,
when you're
right.
The assessor. So he wanted to make sure we understood the concept. And I'm very appreciative for him bringing this to our attention, because I wouldn't have thought of it. But the bottom line, to back up a little bit, as you said, the millage rate for the Fort Smith School District has not been raised since 1987. They're looking at about a 5.8 to 6.8. Who knows where they're going to come down, Kyle? Roughly $120 million in improvements to both facilities and programs. But it will, even if you have that exemption, that homestead exemption, $350 a year, you know, if the base goes up, let's just throw out a number. If you're paying now, if your tax bill now is $750 and you get the $350 exemption, you know, so your bill is $400. But if the overall bill goes up to $1,000,
sure,
$350 just brings it in so you're now paying $650. You will
see an
increase. So everyone sees an increase. It's just that those with exemptions, they don't lose their exemption, but they will see an increase. Now, I'm sure the school board and supporters of the millage probably were not appreciative of this story, and it was not our intention to...
It's just a fact.
Yeah, to be pro or con. It's just, you know, information is information, and we wanted to get it out there. But it is, I mean, like I said, it is the first time, if it passes... It'd be the first time a millage has been increased since 1987.
It's good. School
board hopes to get it on the May 22nd ballot.
Right. And sometimes we've seen, you know, in the past with Fayetteville and Pea Ridge and Bentonville, there have been long sort of time frames between when the school board says, yes, let's put this on there in the ballot. This is a little bit more compressed than we're used to.
It's very much compressed. And I think there's a pro and con to whether that's going to be a good or a bad thing. I mean,
well, you often hear critics say, why didn't you put it on the regular ballot?
Right. Well,
why is it a special
election? State law now requires it to be on a primary ballot or a November ballot. But so they were shooting for this, instead of a general election ballot. So it'll be interesting to see if they have enough time to sell it. They had this committee of 57 citizens come up with a proposal. It was very unique. In fact, it was very transparent. A lot of folks call for transparency. That this was one of the more transparent. I've been watching government in many cities and schools and for a long time. And again, not before or against the proposal, this is one of the more transparent exercises.
You were led into the sausage factory.
Yes.
You saw it made.
Yeah,
right?
And I saw these citizens, you know, argue and debate and these citizens who pay the taxes. Mm-hmm. So, but now they have to go sell it. And so it'll be interesting to see if they have enough time to do that.
All right, Michael, you can read about all of this and much more at talkbusiness.net. Michael, thank you so much. Talk to you next Friday.
Yes, sir.
President Trump has signed an order raising tariffs on certain imports.
We want to build our ships. We want to build our planes. We want to build our military equipment with steel, with aluminum from our country.
Some American companies will benefit from the change. Others will suffer. We'll hear from winners and losers Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3. Siloam Springs residents say the city needs more affordable housing. According to recently released survey results, about 40% of respondents rated the availability of affordable quality housing as good, while around 36% rated it as fair. City Communication Officer Holland Hayden agrees affordable housing is a challenge in Siloam Springs.
Especially rentals. There's just not a lot of rentals here in Siloam Springs, and it can be a challenge for a family or even a single person to find something affordable. Earlier this year, we put out an RFQ, request for proposals, for a plot of land that the city owned for development. And the one that was selected was actually for an apartment complex. So we are actively working to bring more housing to Siloam Springs that people can afford.
Hayden says the city last issued a survey like this in 2006. About 1,000 people participated in the recent questionnaire, and she says there was some discrepancy in response regarding interaction with the city's website. According to the survey, the majority of respondents say they'd be very likely or somewhat likely to use the city's website to access city information, but about 42% of respondents reported visiting the website only 3 to 12 times in the last year. Hayden says there are other ways to reach residents.
I think that using our social media channels is going to be one of the best ways because we have pretty high engagement for a town of 16, 17,000. We have, you know, close to 12,000 likes on it, and that's pretty impressive. But we want to make sure that they're getting the right information. So there are ways to actually sign up for, like, text notifications, email notifications, and I'm actually working on a couple of posts right now that say, here, you want to get information come straight to you, we can sign you up for this service to get information on either job openings or bid openings or new news stories.
The full results of the survey can be found at SilomSprings.com. Just as teachers in West Virginia ended their 9-day strike this week after bargaining a 5% pay increase for all state employees, educators in Oklahoma started preparing for their own walkout. The state holds the title for the lowest paid teachers in the country. The average annual income for a high school teacher, just over $42,000 a year, but many teachers make less.
Today, we're putting lawmakers on notice. If by April 1st, they have been unable to meet the terms we've laid out, then on April 2nd, the Oklahoma Education Association calls on every teacher, support professional, administrator to walk out of their schoolhouse and head to the statehouse. On April 2nd, schools across the state will begin to shut down.
That's Alicia Priest, president of the Oklahoma Education Association, speaking during a media conference yesterday. A video of that conference was posted to the group's Facebook page. That's where our audio is coming from.
Our goal remains the same as it has for years. And today, we demand that the legislature pass a budget with the necessary revenue to provide teachers and support professionals a significant pay raise and restore critical funding to our classrooms.
The Oklahoma Education Association is demanding $10,000 more per teacher, a $6,000 raise for the 2019 fiscal year, and then $2,000 raises each year over the next 2 years. They want $5,000 raises for support professionals like secretaries, custodians, and bus drivers, $200 million to restore school funding, $213 million for state employee raises, and $255 million for health care funding. That adds up to $3.3 billion over the next 3 years. But Alicia Priest points out, educators in Oklahoma have not received state-funded raises in 10 years. And since 2008, general state funds for K through 12 education have been slashed by 28%.
Oklahoma educators have reached a breaking point. We cannot, no, we will not allow our students to go without any longer.
Numerous school districts across Oklahoma have gone to four-day weeks to save money, and Priest says many are educating students with out-of-date curriculum and no textbooks. Other school districts have had to go even further. This is Kim Morris, a pre-K teacher at Manford Early Childhood Center.
My 4- and 5-year-old students have to learn in a school where half the lights are turned off through the day. Our thermostats have been turned down to 30 to 63 degrees, so we're wearing our coats and jackets in our classroom. We have to stay bundled up to stay warm so that our school can save money.
Two groups, professional Oklahoma educators and the Oklahoma Council of Public Affairs, have come out against the call for a walkout.
Walton Arts Center welcomes Post Secret for 3 shows this weekend. Since 2004, the blog postsecret.com has received over 1 million anonymous, artful secrets mailed on postcards. The production takes these memorable secrets and transforms them into a theatrical show filled with audience interaction. WaltonArtsCenter.com for tickets to this weekend's performance. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers up-to-the-minute news coverage with breaking news from NWADG.com. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette reports local, state, national, and Razorback news. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, our community, our paper.
The Arkansas International follows a simple mission: publish the best literature from the United States and abroad. Published twice a year by the University of Arkansas Program in Creative Writing and Translation, the Arkansas International seeks previously unpublished works. The next issue is out soon, this spring. But next week, there's a party for the Arkansas International, a concert featuring Ozaquaba at Stage 18 in downtown Fayetteville. So we asked Jeffrey Brock, the editor and also a faculty member in the creative writing program, about both the party and the publication.
I would say that there's a mix of the best American writing that we can publish, and we try to put that in conversation with writing from around the world, much of it in translation. So you get a very international mix, a mix that tries to reflect the title of the magazine in some way, in the sense that we try to remember where we're from and reach beyond that and put Arkansas in conversation with the world.
It's fitting then that the feature at your fundraising concert is the embodiment of Arkansas International.
Yes, this band Ozaquaba, who the name comes from the West African word for welcome, Aquaba, combined with combined with Ozark, so to signal a kind of Ozark welcome. And this is a band that plays West African Afropop music and reggae, and they're based right here in Northwest Arkansas. The Angelo Yao, the front man, who's a wonderful drummer and dancer from the Ivory Coast and now lives in Fayetteville. Most of the band lives in Eureka Springs. They're a wonderful dance pop band, and they really get the crowd moving.
But between his time in Northwest Arkansas, he's now a resident of Fayetteville, and the time he lived in Ivory Coast, he was in other places, or at least touring through other places, right?
He toured around the world with the Ivory Coast National, a company called Kotebo, which is a world-famous dance and theater company out of the Ivory Coast, and he joined that troupe at the age of 14 and toured the world through the 90s with this troupe. And you know, in the way these things happen with our lives, he ended up settling in the U.S., first in Vermont and then in Northwest Arkansas, where we're lucky to have him.
Stage 18 is where this will take place, and it's on March
14th. Wednesday, March 14th. Doors open at 8. And, yeah, Stage 18, as you know, is a wonderful recent addition to the Fayetteville music scene.
How will it be set up? Because it's hard to hear Ozaquaba and not move.
That's right. So we're going to have plenty of room for dancing. We're I think we're going to set it up with very few tables in the way, maybe some tables around the edge of the room, and then most of the space cleared, I think, because people do move.
Whether they think they're going to or not.
I saw them recently up in Eureka Springs, and the dance floor was just seething for most of the show and didn't want to let the band leave the stage.
This is a fundraiser for Arkansas International. Money will be used for production costs and to be able to pay riders?
That's right. Those are the two things exactly that we'll use the money for, to actually produce the physical print issue of the magazine and to pay the riders, which is an important component of it for us. We pay fairly well by literary magazine standards, and we're trying to, you know, be able to pay even better so that riders can be compensated for the work that they send us and let us you know, bring into the public world.
Can I ask some possibly pedestrian questions about translation?
Sure.
The art of it? Well, first of all, some of the translator works that you have in Arkansas International, do they come to you translated, or do you have to have someone here translate?
Usually they come to us translated. Okay. In fact, we often will solicit translators that we admire. I, as a translator myself, I know many translators in this country and abroad, and I send them emails and say, what do you got for me? And please send me some exciting new work that you've translated. So that's the way we get most of it. And they send it to us. Translators are now starting to hear about our magazine as a venue that welcomes international writing, and so we're starting to just receive it in the mail or, you know, figuratively on our website. And occasionally we do also talk to translators and about work that they and they propose work to us, like there's this story that I'm interested in translating. It's about such and such. Might that be something that would interest you? And so that's occasionally happens.
You are a translator. I would imagine taking somebody else's work, trying to take it from their presumably native language, put it in a different language, is a huge amount of responsibility, because you want to get the same meaning, right, as close as possible, but you're going to be dealing with euphemisms in one language that maybe don't exist in another.
True, exactly. I mean, you want to get the same meaning, but the meaning's actually only part of it. You want to get the same effect, the same. You want to create, ideally, the same experience or literary experience that the reader of the original has to the best of your ability. And so, things that are funny in the original should be funny in the translation. And if they might be literally faithful but not funny, so is that a faithful translation? So there's all, when we talk about faithful translations, there's people, different people mean different things, and sometimes it's narrowly refers to kind of literal meaning, and other times it's a more holistic kind of sense of what is this text doing to us, and how can we get the translation to do the same thing to readers in English.
Let's say I've written in English, and a translator is going to put it in something, every other language I can't speak. But let's say it's Swahili. I, as the original author, will never be able to read what you have translated into. How do I know? What's the communication between you and, if the original author is still alive, to make sure that's happening, goal?
Well, it often doesn't happen. So it's a leap of faith. And sometimes there are lots of stories in the translation world about sort of translations run amok, you know, where translations gone wild, where, in fact, certain cultures may have certain expectations from certain genres of literature. So if they're translating a book that they perceive it to be a certain genre, and say it doesn't have a sex scene, and they expect this kind of book to have a sex scene, the translator might add a sex scene.
Well, that's not translating anymore.
That's not translating anymore, right. These are the kinds of stories, horror stories that writers, this is what a writer's worst fear is, that, you know, that a translator is going to do something to my book when they translated it, and I'll never know because I can't read that language. And occasionally it happens, but by and large, you know, translators are very loyal to their writers. And so sometimes to a fault, where they're not willing to take the liberties necessary to recreate some effect that is not literal.
What's interesting, a difference between literature and music, is Angelo and Ozawaba they may play something and not have to translate because music can be more universal, I guess, because of the beat and the groove. Does that make you at all a little bit envious?
Oh, absolutely. I'm envious of musicians in all kinds of ways, too. Also, the immediate audience feedback. You can see them moving and having a great time on the floor, whereas when you're a writer and you publish something, you virtually never get to see the reader's reaction. And so there's that that connection to the audience that I think writers generally envy musicians for.
The Arkansas International, so on one hand, you bring international voices to us. I'm making a guess here that another idea is to take Arkansas as a literary export.
Yes. Certainly,
not necessarily Arkansas writers, but this publication.
Right. Certainly this publication. And we have published a couple of Arkansas writers. We don't make a point to publish a lot of Arkansas writers, but they are certainly I kind of like the idea of having an Arkansas writer or two in each issue. But yes, we're also trying to maybe change for certain people what they expect from the state of Arkansas. And by providing this international, sophisticated mix of different voices and different ideas in conversation with each other, when unfortunately for a lot of people, particularly in this country, the image of Arkansas doesn't include, you know, international conversations with lots of different kinds of people.
Well, international conversations of all kind will take place March 14th, Stage 18. Begins at 7, doors at 7?
Doors open at 8. And it is a fundraiser, so we're asking for a $10 donation at the door.
That's pretty inexpensive.
And we'll also have copies of the magazine for sale and subscriptions for sale for anybody who's interested in that.
If someone comes in and they'd like to donate over $10, do you take that?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely, that would be lovely.
And the next issue comes out in April.
That's right. Next issue out in April. And
you have the cover picked yet?
We do have a wonderful cover picked from Maya Lin. It's a piece up at Crystal Bridges, actually, The Silver Upper White River. And it's going to wrap around front to back on the cover. And I think it's going to look terrific.
Maya Lin for the cover.
That's
well
right.
Done.
Well done.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeffrey Brock is the editor of the Arkansas International. He's also a member of the faculty in the University of Arkansas program in creative writing and translation. The dance party featuring Ozaquaba is Wednesday night, beginning at 8, at Stage 18 in downtown Fayetteville.
In the background are the Yellow Jackets doing a tune called Anticipation. I'm Robert Ginsburg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night and Saturday morning. We'll hear more from the Yellow Jackets. We'll also hear from John Schofield, Julian Lage, Cyrus Chestnut, Bill Frizzell, and more. Tune in to Shades of Jazz here on KUAF, your national public radio station.
With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
So I'm about to leave for a week in Mississippi.
And then after that, our spring break week, which is beginning the 19th in this state. Where we live, Arkansas.
Right.
We're going to be doing some archive special shows, so you and I are not going to talk to for a while.
But I promise I'll come back.
Oh, yes.
So while I'm gone, I have 5 things that you cannot miss.
Oh, I love this. Let's go.
Starting with Pass the Ammo.
The movie that was made in Eureka Springs?
The movie that was made in Eureka Springs. They're having a bad movie night on the 14th, which I think is Wednesday.
Yes. Yes, you are right.
And they're going to show Pass the Ammo in the city auditorium where a bunch of it was filmed.
The guy who was Luke of Luke and Laura?
Anthony Geary.
Anthony Geary is in this. Tim Curry is in this.
Tim Curry
Annie Potts?
Annie Potts, who was fresh from Ghostbusters on the big screen and designing women. Bill Paxton.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking for somebody who was in Eureka when the movie was shot. So I was talking to Bo Satori. Who had a gallery. He said Willie Nelson was in town all the time because he was courting his current wife, who was the makeup artist on the film. And everybody was out at the new Ramada Inn swimming in the pool and shooting pool. So go to the city auditorium at 8 o'clock on Wednesday. It's free to get in, but they'd like your donations because it's a fund to do some restoration on the city auditorium.
This is wonderful. Okay, you're right. That's a not miss.
Okay. Also on the 14th, because you can go during the day.
All right.
To Silver Dollar City. Because they're opening the new roller coaster.
Next.
That's how I feel about roller coasters. But I talked to Rob Alvey, who is like internationally known as a roller coaster addict. You got to understand, these people are crazier than those of us who put on armor and go poke each other with sticks. They travel all over the world to ride coasters. They travel all over the world to ride new coasters.
Well, God bless them. So there was a new coaster opening.
And it's called Time Traveler. And here's what makes it special. There have been launch roller coasters, and there have been spinning roller coasters, but there's never been a spinning launch roller coaster. Anyway.
Thrill seekers.
March 14th is the first of their spring ride days, and that's when it's supposed to open. It's going to be nuts. They're open all three weekends of March and then the first weekend of April, and then they roll into their summer schedule. And then you can come back to Fayetteville, and you've got to go see Viet Gone at Theater Square.
Now we're talking.
I talked to Quy Nguyen when they did the show here. It had a different title.
Yes, it was workshopped here.
Yeah,
yes.
It was workshopped here. And he's just amazing and cool. He's involved in, like, the Marvel Studios Writers Program, and he's co-founder of the New York City theater company Vampire Cowboys. So you know it's going to be an interesting show.
It promises ninjas.
And he's also the child of Vietnamese immigrants.
Right.
So it's going to be a really interesting show. And it continues March 14th through April 8th at Theater Squared. Saturday night is the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas Pops concert. And it includes all sorts of movie blockbuster music, Jaws and Star Wars and Singing in the Rain and The Sound of Music. And then the Fayetteville Jazz Collective is going to play with them. There will be no roller coasters.
That's good.
That's at 7:30 on Saturday at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. And then, number five, one of those stories that reminded me of why I do this for a living.
Yeah.
It's about a new piece of music called Pre-Existing Condition. And we're going to talk about it Sunday, so you have to come back.
Okay, but that's the fifth one.
That's the fifth one.
Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. SONA, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, continues its 63rd season with a Pops concert Saturday, March 10th at Walton Arts Center, as Maestro Paul Haas, SONA musicians, and the Fayetteville Jazz Collective present an evening of iconic Hollywood film music. Tickets at 443-5600 or sonamusic.org.
This is the time of year when about a half dozen sports vie for attention on area college campuses. Here are some of this weekend's notables. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith basketball teams open play in the NCAA Division II national tournament this weekend. The women meet West Texas A&M today. The men face the University of Texas Permian Basin tomorrow afternoon. Both Lion teams earned a number 7 seed in their respective tournaments. The University of Arkansas men's basketball team playing in the quarterfinals of the SEC tournament in St. Louis tonight. Last night, Arkansas defeated South Carolina 69-64 to advance to tonight's 8:30 game against Florida. The University of Arkansas indoor track and field squads are in College Station this weekend for the NCAA championships. The women enter the meet ranked 2nd in the nation. The men are rated 4th. The Arkansas gymnastics team is in Norman, Oklahoma tonight for a matchup with some of the best other teams in the country. The meet is hosted by number 1 Oklahoma, and top 15 teams Arizona State and Denver are also there. Arkansas, by the way, ranked 10th in the nation. The University of Arkansas baseball team is taking a tip from the National Weather Service and altering this weekend's home series against Kent State. The Razorbacks are now playing 2 games today at Baum Stadium and a single game on Sunday. The forecast for tomorrow includes a pretty good chance of thunderstorms. And the Razorback softball team begins SEC play this weekend with 3 games at Georgia beginning tomorrow afternoon. Shannon Wurst has been a staple in the Northwest Arkansas music scene for years, and her versatility has allowed her to play at a variety of venues. One day, she's performing on stage at a folk festival. The next, she's singing tunes with kids in a classroom. After taking some time off from producing her own music, Shannon's back with a brand new album titled Sugar and Kerosene. Last week, Shannon came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss her latest project with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda.
Well, it's been a while since I released a new album. I've been busy. You know, I started doing a lot of school programs and writing songs with students. So that kind of shifted my focus a little bit for a little while. And then after several years of doing that, I was really kind of itching to get back to writing some songs from a different perspective. So that's how this new album was born.
And what is that new perspective? Is it being a mama? Because you have been busy being a mama for about 2 years now.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I've gotten that question quite a bit of how maybe that's changed my writing. And I definitely think it's seeped in there in some ways. And in other ways, I haven't really noticed it as much. I've noticed, you know, the word baby is used on this album in certain places and not referencing my own. But it always gives you, you know, being a mama definitely gives you a whole new perspective on life. And so I hope a lot of that has seeped into this album.
So what's kind of maybe the a different perspective that you're bringing to this album, I guess, as a whole?
As a whole, it just has a different feel to it. It's more of a fuller sound, more of an electric sound. And as far as the songwriting goes, I did several songs on this album that are more character-based and not so... they're not personal songs. And so that was fun. And they were more challenging to write, to try to understand a character that was made up in my mind. It took several drafts to feel like I got those type of songs right on this album.
So why did you decide to go ahead and challenge yourself and try and do that character writing?
Well, one of the things, you know, I was talking about earlier was doing these school programs, and part of the school programs is to push ourselves through writing. And so I felt like, you know, I got to practice what I preach, and I felt like some of these character songs came out of that idea of just wanting to try to explore something new.
Well, I want to ask you about the title of the album, Sugar and Kerosene. I love it. Is it referencing the songs or is it referencing you? A little bit sweet, a little bit of feisty.
Oh, well, I love the idea of that being both. I actually got the album title from one of the songs. And the song, of course, is called Sugar and Kerosene. And it was inspired by Kinder Burns documentary about the Dust Bowl. So I don't know if you've seen this documentary, but it's available on Netflix. You should check it out if you want a good tearjerker. And so as I was watching this, I was just taking notes, and I was, of course, really compelled to write about it because I was really moved by these people's personal stories. So Sugar and Kerosene was something that that they would give the babies for their cough, and I thought that was just, like, the most tragic thing I could think of. So, of course, it seeped into the song. Mix a little sugar.
Let's talk about some of the other songs on this album. How about This and That? What is This and That?
This and That. This and That is a fun little tune. I would say it's a love song, actually. Mm. Something else new to explore in my writing. It's a little love song. Has a little Cajun beat to it. So it was really fun to try to put together.
Could we hear it?
Sure, might as well. I'll have to say, too, this song was... written because I couldn't figure out what else to write about. And so you'll hear it in the first line. I was feeling frustrated from writing, and then it luckily turned into a song later.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure a song is supposed to be beautiful, but everyone I write doesn't turn out right. You deserve fancy words and thought out rhymes. All I have up to bat is I love you and us and this and that. I'm pretty sure love supposed to be a movie like falling hard and fast, frame by frame. Two people have an obstacle and a happy ending, but we don't have to act, cause I love you and us and this and that. It's the IPA six pack and a vinyl you brought back. It's the fact that you know me better than my own zodiac. It's just that you packed
trucker hat, and that's all it is, and that I'm pretty sure life is supposed to be planned out. Get wrapped with a card and a bow to match. I gotta say, I gotta admit, I love the mess we made. It better than Butterfat. I love you and us and this and that. I love you and us and this and that. I love you and us and this and that.
I like it. I don't think that sounds frustrated at all.
Well, it's lovely because it started out from a place of not being able to write. And, of course, being able to get a song out of that place always feels good.
Yeah. And when you get to that place, are you the type of person that just kind of pushes through it, or do you kind of get up and walk away?
Well, I feel like I've tried all of those approaches, all of the above, and sometimes one will work and sometimes the other will work. So there's no cut and dry method, I don't think, to any sort of my writing. But that's the lovely part about writing, is it keeps you challenged.
And how long have you been working on this album?
Well, you know,
off and on.
Actually, no, I started working on this album, actually recorded it back in October, and I had actually given myself a deadline, which is a new thing as a mom to, I knew I wanted to record an album in order to kind of make the space in my life to write the album. I knew a deadline was going to be pretty important for me. So I started, I guess it was probably late last summer, trying to put the songs together and write. So I gave myself a few months to write the album. I would get up before anybody else would in the house so I could have it nice and quiet, be able to think a little bit, and put the whole album together in those few months. And then I was able to go to Lawrence, Kansas to work with Mike West, which I don't know if you're familiar with Mike West, but he and his wife, Katie, have a really wonderful band called Truck Stop Honeymoon, and you should check out their music if you ever get a chance. But they have a great little studio, and they both play on the album quite a bit, and so they're lovely to work with.
Had you worked with them before?
No, it was my first time. I actually had seen them at a house concert at Lori Holyfield's here in Fayetteville and got to talking to them after the show, and he was telling me about his studio, and he seemed like they would be a really great fit for my kind of music. So we went ahead and booked studio time several months out so that I could be ready to go when the music was ready.
Oh, that's great that worked out. Kind of a chance meeting, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me a little bit more about this song on the album, Big Mama's Little Dive.
Big Mama's Little Dive. That was a fun tune to write. It's actually a song that is written about my grandma's bar growing up. My grandma Goose, which is my stepmom's mom, had a little bar, and it was called Big Mama's. And I've always been intrigued by her. She's passed away now, but her and her best friend ran this bar together. And you know, they both had lots of children each, and, you know, they were single back in the day, and they were trying to make things work, and they went into business together running this bar. And, of course, I just love the way that they treated people. You know, the people around there still talk about what it was like to go in there. They would have your name on your pint glass. They knew exactly what you were drinking. It's just a little hole in the wall. But there was shuffleboard, and the guys playing dominoes. So as a kid, I have these memories about, you know, we could go in there after school for a minute and trying to, like, learn how to shoot pool. And, you know, just being in that space, and it's a quaint little memory.
Does it still exist, or where was it?
This was on the Logan Franklin County line near Paris, Arkansas, more Carbon City area, and there is a bar there. The same bar is there, of course, different owners, different name.
different vibe.
Different vibe. Okay, but maybe still worth, at least I can get a beer there.
You can get a beer there if you like Miller Lite.
Oh, okay. Fair. I can drink me Miller Lite, but what I really enjoy is bourbon, and you have a song on here better than bourbon.
I do.
Is that about bourbon?
It is about bourbon, roundaboutly. It is about bourbon, but it's also, it's meant to be a song to pay the highest compliment to somebody. Saying that bourbon's pretty good, but even you are better than bourbon. Mm. It's the opening track on the album, and it's a nice, I think it's a sensual song. Yeah, it was a really fun one to record. It has some really great piano tunes on there.
Now when the hurt starts a hurting, I know
is there another song you'd like to play for us?
Yes, let's see. How about we do Bring It On Myself?
Okay, tell me about that song.
This song was written by a good friend of mine, Josh Wardlaw. You might know him as Junior Soapbox. He has lots of really great songs, and I'm honored that he let me put this one on the album.
I don't know, but it's never quite enough. Never quite enough, or it's too much. All I know, it doesn't have to be so tough. I beat it to the ground before it ever gets up. I'm always cracking jokes about the judgment day. The judgment day, yeah, it's a funny thing. I'm always cracking jokes about the wind and the flames, even when they're blowing towards me. By bringing on myself without any help. Maybe bringing on myself, by bringing on myself without any help. I'm always trying to turn it into a song. Into a song, whatever goes wrong. I put myself in difficult situations, looking for a hook on the way to the bottom. I find myself riding into the wind when it starts blowing. I find myself riding into the wind, and I never understand why it takes me so long. By bringing on myself without any help. Maybe bringing on myself, by bringing on myself without any with the devil on the shelf. I never quit when I'm behind. When I'm ahead, I give up. When the going gets tough, I pull myself up to a table with a plate and a cup, serving it up when I've had enough. Maybe bringing on myself, I bring it on myself without any help. Without any help. Maybe bringing on myself, I bring it on myself without any help. Maybe bringing on myself, I bring it on myself without any help.
Mm-hmm. you.
Yeah, thank you.
How does that work, having someone kind of gift you their song that they wrote?
Well, I don't know if it was so much gifting it to me as it was...
You claimed it?
Just really, yeah, more so claiming it. Telling Josh that... I actually remember, I think that I was texting him on the way to the studio, and it occurred to me that I hadn't actually asked him permission to record his song, although I was sure he would be fine with it, but I felt like I should probably go ahead and let him know. But I had been playing it for a while, and as I was writing all these other songs, I kind of felt like it fell in line with a lot of the stuff I was wanting to talk about on the album. So it seemed like a natural fit, and of course he granted me his blessing with playing his song, which was wonderful.
Absolutely. Well, people want to hear some of the songs from the new album. You are having a CD release party on March 17th.
I am. I'm very excited about it. It is St. Patrick's Day. It's going to be at Stage 18, and for those of you, if you haven't been to Stage 18, it's a sweet little venue here in town. It's right off the square, across from Taste of Thai, and we're going to be starting at 8 p.m., and what I'm really excited about the CD release party is that we're doing two different sets. The first set is going to be with the electric band playing all this new stuff, all the new tunes from the album, and the band includes Brad Helms, Dave Bright, and Dan Redman. He's out of Eureka Springs, and Rick Endel, and myself, and a good friend of mine, Raven Naramore, who lives in Lawrence, Kansas, is also going to come join us for some vocal work. And the second set will be a throwback set, which will be fun. I'm going to play some of the songs from previous albums, and I'm going to be joined by my stepdad, Ed Carr, and our good friend, Standy Altman, on bass for that set. And then at the end, of course, we'll all come together and do a few tunes together as well.
Sounds like a lot of fun, and maybe the last chance to hear you live for a little bit.
This is true. I'm going to be taking a break after this particular show and welcoming another new little one into the world. So, I'm gonna be taking some time off to have some family time.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on the album and the growing family, and thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
That was Shannon Werth speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. Her latest album, Sugar and Kerosene, is available now. More information about her new record and the CD release show March 17th at Stage 18 in Fayetteville is available at shannonwerth.com. By the way, Shannon is also playing tomorrow in Bentonville as part of a benefit for a family dealing with health issues. That benefit is from noon to 10 p.m. tomorrow at Bike Rack Brewery on 8th Street in Bentonville. You can find out many more details at Shannon Werth's Facebook page.
91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville, it's open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Mulberry. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF 91.3. I'm Kyle Kelms. Thanks for listening. Sunday morning at 9, we'll be back with Weekend Ozarks at Large on 91.3. One quick number to take note of. Tomorrow marks 28 years since I've been producing this show on KUAF. Thank you for your continued support and for allowing me to have this, the greatest job in the world. We'll start the next 28 years Monday with a brand new edition of Daily Ozarks at Large. You can hear our program every Monday through Friday at noon and 7 p.m. If you'd like to know more or listen again, you can do that at ozarksatlarge.com and kuaf.com.